Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Atura kayasame sato anaturang chitang bhavisati ti. Which all you Pali scholars would know was the saying in the Kanda Sanyutta to Nalakapita, which was saying that though your body might be afflicted with sickness, and my mind will not be afflicted. Which is, seeing as it's I've got a cold today and getting over an illness, and seeing as it's my 51st birthday today, so it's 1 year closer to my grave, that it's a nice time to talk about body contemplation, body awareness. Again, in these talks which I'm giving at the beginning of this Rains Retreat of 2002, it's good to give such talks as not so much theoretical as practical. That's how we can contemplate aspects of the Dhamma in order to free the body, free the mind, and make the opportunity for developing the Eightfold Path more efficient, more smooth, more successful. And so the subject this evening is to doing body contemplation. And of course, when you're sick, you can't do much more except body contemplation. And being, again, a birthday, reminding you of the body's impermanence, it's the birth of my body, not the birth of anything else. And so it just shows just the fact that this body is a great burden for you, that what one can only look forward to more sickness, to more frailty, to more things wearing away, until eventually the sickness gets so bad that you will die. And before that happens, it's very powerful to do the body reflections as a Buddhist monk, novice, anagarika, layman, laywoman, visitor to this monastery for various reasons. And one of the great reasons for doing this is not only does it take away a lot of the disturbance to monastic life, but it also clears away sort of the root of many defilements which block you from letting go and getting into deep meditations and seeing even more profound dhammas. And the Buddha gave many different ways of contemplating the body. Either the 31 parts of the body in the suttas, 32 in the commentaries, doing the death meditations, doing the funeral meditations, the corpse meditations rather. And each of those meditations was there for a purpose, as a contemplation, in order for one to get so used to seeing this body as something which is just a natural process, which really does not have the qualities of beauty and ugliness. It's neither attractive nor really disgusting. It's just a body, that's all. Sometimes if we go too much into the attractiveness of the body, then the Buddha said to do contemplations of the ugliness of the body. Someone who gets too into the ugliness of the body, too negativity, to do things like loving kindness. Whatever it is, to balance the mind for the purpose of letting go of this body. And because the concern for this body, for its health, for its well-being, for its longevity, as many of you upstairs in the dining room saw today, all these people wishing me long life because it was my birthday. What a stupid thing to do. Long life means long suffering. If they really had compassion, they would wish me a short life. So the way we regard our body or the body of other people, just wanting it to live long, wanting it to be healthy, that when we're in a monastery, when we're practicing the Dhamma, when we're contemplating the Dhamma, we've got to have this courageous and ruthless honesty towards our bodies. And that ruthless, courageous honesty means we contemplate it. We contemplate it in its constituent parts, either as four elements or 31 parts. We take apart this body. And that can be have two purposes again. It can have the purpose of seeing this body and other people's body as something which is not me, not mine. It just belongs to nature. It has nothing to do with me. And so you don't fight this body, nor do you grab onto it. You neither push it away nor pull it towards you. You just have this peaceful coexistence with this body, realizing that one day it will be leaving you. Unfortunately, for many people, there is still just far too much sort of attachment to the body. By attachment, we have this word upadana, which also means fuel. It's the fuel for creating a sense of self. That's why the body can fuel the ego, fuel the self, about being beautiful, being ugly, being healthy, or whatever. And so that coming to a monastery, that we have to have a lot of humility with this body, to realize that this body is not beautiful, it's just an ordinary body, it's falling apart, bits of skin flake off every now and again. That's why you have to clean up your kutis, your rooms, because the dust in your rooms is all your dead skin coming off. So that those person who vacuum this hall today, who just vacuum off the dead bits of the monks, the dead bits of the anagarikas, and the dead bits of the ladies as well. That's what goes into the vacuum cleaner. Really, we should do a ceremony when we take out the dust from the vacuum cleaner, do anicca sankara, because it's dead bits of each one of us. And actually focusing on that way, that it's not as if you feel absolutely disgusted and revolted by this body, but you just give up concern about it. Because the way I've focused on body awareness for a long time is just to always reflect on just the demands of this body. The demands of this body are huge. How much time I have to spend every day just looking after the demands of my physical frame. You know, like getting up in the morning, have to take it to the toilet. Then you have to, you know, wash its face. And then you've got to sit it down in a comfortable position. Maybe you've got to exercise it. Maybe you've got to take some medicines. Then you've got to feed it breakfast. And then you've got to sit it down in this way. Then you've got to exercise it again. Then you've got to shower it. Then you've got to shave its hair and beard. And then you've got to go and eat. And throughout the whole day, you've got to be scratching and massaging and goodness knows what else. And if you count up the minutes and count up the hours which you spend on this body, even in a monastery, it's a huge portion of one's time. And out there in the world, in the big bad world, that people spend just almost 100% of their time just on the concerns of the body, trying to get rid of its of its pain and its sickness. They're trying to give it pleasure, trying to seek pleasure, trying to work so hard to get a good house so the body is comfortable, getting an air conditioner or a heater or whatever else it is, to try and make this hopeless body comfortable, and going to doctors and health food stores and eating just good food to try and keep this body okay. In fact, that as one person pointed out many, many years ago when I was a young monk, every time you move the body, even every time that the eyelids of your eyes blink, that's always because this body demands comfort. And that's one of my body contemplations, just to reflect on just how demanding this body is and how so much of my time is taken up trying to find comfort and being a slave to this body. And that's just my body. If you seek for another person's body with lust or with trying to have a relationship, then that's another person's body you have to worry about. And it's double suffering, double dukkha. And that's, of course, one of the reasons why the Buddha praised celibacy. In that simplicity, you have less to worry about, less to think about, less to do in your life. And when you have less to do, you have more freedom to contemplate Dhamma, to realize Dhamma, and to liberate oneself. So one of the purposes of reflecting upon the body and just how much a burden it is actually to see what the problem is and to get a sense of nibbida, this repulsion away from the body. So in the world, we're taught, especially when we're young, we're taught to regard our bodies as something beautiful, something healthy, something we can celebrate. That's why just in all the magazines, the glossy magazines, and on the TV, and even some of the adverts, you only see beautiful people. But I'm very glad now that I've got my face on the back of buses in Singapore, so that even my ugly face is on the back of the buses. So that means that not always, you don't have to always be a supermodel or to be a sports star to have your face in an advertisement anymore. But it's just, you know, that face, that body, that's all that is, and that's not obviously the person. But when we let go of this, then we don't really mind about our bodies. I was just sometimes fascinated why, you know, when people take photographs, why some monks aren't very happy having their face photographed. It's only sort of four elements they're photographing. It's only just a few khandhas, a few parts of the body which are being photographed. And it's not me, not mine, not self. So I don't care when people photograph me. They can just do that as much as they want. Because it's only the body. They're not photographing me. They're just photographing the body. That's all. So as such, it's just a sense of nibbida towards, you know, this body. So you don't care about it so much. You don't worry about it so much. And by doing the reflections on the body, whether it's the quartz meditations or whether it's a reflection of the parts of the body, taking it apart, what that should produce, if you're doing it properly, would be a sense of separation from the body, a sense of distance from the body, a sense of, you know, the body is not mine. And at least you should start to be able to separate the jitta from the body. And that's why I began the talk with, you know, the phrase from the Kanda Sangyuta, Atura kayasame sato, anaturang chitang bhavisati. Even though the body may be sick, the mind doesn't need to be sick. That's one of the benefits of doing body contemplation. It means when you do get sick, or you do get ill, or you're dying, or you're in hospital, now you realize very clearly it's just the body which is sick, it's just part of nature, it's not me, not mine, not a self. So you can see that the huge benefit that has in your happiness, that you can be more free from the body. Of course, in the very early days of practicing Wat Pa Pong, the body contemplation was really impressed upon you a lot. So you used to do a lot of body contemplation, even as like a young man, when your body was quite fit and healthy. Because sooner or later the body started getting sick. But by doing that body contemplation, you know, again and again and again, as well as your breath meditation, which is another form of body contemplation, by going to see corpses cut up in the autopsies, which you were able to go to, and by being present to all these cremations, you know, which are very much open cremations, because of even that lifestyle, that you got a very good idea of this body and what it consists of. And so one of the first results of that was I remember having typhus fever and being in a hospital. And it was very unpleasant being in a hospital in a third world country, which Thailand was, in a very poor part of that third world country. I know they used to get aid from the governments, but the aid, I remember just the head of the hospital who'd always drive to see Ajahn Chah in this new, Land Rover, which was supplied by the US. It was like almost his personal car. That's where aid went in those days, in those places. So in the monk's ward of Ubon Hospital 30 years ago, it was just a line of beds on one wall, a line of beds on the other wall. And of course, when I had typhus fever, it was so bad that they took me into the hospital and bung me on the bed and they shoved the drip in my arm. And the first time in hospital in a third world country. And one of my first memories of that is of seeing the nurse, a male nurse, at the desk in the corner, leaving at 6 p.m. And I was waiting for the night nurse to come. And 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, still was not a night nurse. And so I said to the monk in the next bed to me, it was a monk's ward, "Where's the night nurse?" He said, "There is no night nurse. If you get really sick at night and if you get very ill, that's just your bad luck, your bad karma. You only had a nurse half the day." So the monks used to help each other out at night time because there's no one else there. And of course, being a young monk, you think, "No, please help, take me home. I don't like this." So it's very scary when you've sort of got a heavy fever, you're not quite sure what it is, and you're in a sort of a very poor hospital like that. But I do remember that just one day, just the result of doing body contemplation actually came to the fore when I managed, sitting or lying down on that bed, certainly not in any posture which you see in books, just lying in all sorts of contortions on the bed, just deciding just to really watch my breath and just to completely let go of this very painful and aching and a body which had just absolutely no energy at all. I remember that he didn't even have any bedpans there, so to go to the toilet, you know, fortunately, having beds in a ward, you could actually hang on to the railings at the end of the bed and lurch, you know, just almost like jump to the next bed and hold on to those rails. And that was the way you could actually make your way to the toilet. And it would be a big expedition to get to that toilet, over half an hour sometimes. And when you get to the toilet, you sit there for a long time because you want to make sure you did all your business so you could actually get back again another half an hour to your bed. I'm not exaggerating. When you're very sick with a fever, you've got so little energy. And you know, you have to carry your drip with you on the stand. So this is the sort of weakness I was in, and I decided just to watch my breath, and I got into this beautiful meditation. I was able to actually let go of the body and just allow the mind to be. And of course, that was just one of the results which I had from doing body contemplation in my early years. Because by doing the body contemplation, that what you're actually doing, you're cutting off the tether between the citta and the body. You're releasing that tether so the citta can actually just go off by itself and not receive all of the data of this very sick, ailing and tiring body. And of course, once one does that once, it gives you enormous insights into the nature of this body and this mind and the reason why we do body contemplation. The reason why we do it is, again, not just so that we lessen our lust, so as monks we're not going to disrobe and go and run off with a lady. It was like a lady just go and run off with one of the anagarikas or whatever. We're doing this to go much deeper than that. We're doing this body contemplation to actually to cut off this fetter, this tie between the citta and the mind. Sorry, the citta and the body. Between the citta and the body. And you know you've cut that tether, you know, if that when you sit meditation, even though the body's aching and it's a bit of pain, you can actually let it go. Sometimes you can actually contemplate, now why when the body is aching do we have to pay attention to it? It's painful. Why do we actually go and feel that body, feel that pain? And it's a fascinating question because, you know, it is, we go and seek sort of the body pains. You know why we go and seek the body pains? Is because, again, that we're so concerned about our body that we're concerned to make sure the body is safe and secure. And we just haven't got the courage just to let the body just go on its own resources, just to even die if it has to die. So whenever there's a pain, that's like a warning signal. And it brings up a sense of fear that something might be wrong with my body. I better sort that one out and deal with it. And this is just the way the body will always control you and never let you go. There has to come a time when you just say, okay, body, you can hurt. You can do whatever you want. I'm not going to pay any attention whatsoever. And just go off into the realm of the mind. One of the things I've found with my body contemplations is that once you can contemplate the body long enough to get dispassionate towards it, just realize it's the body, then when you meditate, you can actually leave it alone. You can watch the breath, or you can do loving kindness, or whatever else you're doing, and any aches and pains or stuff in the body, you can just leave alone. And they just disappear simply through inattention. It's the same that if you don't pay attention to what I'm saying, you can just go and think of something else. You know, and sometimes if the talk is not all that interesting, you can go off and think of fantasies or dreams or whatever. You can completely turn off. And you don't have to pay attention to what someone else is saying. You can do that. It's the same in your body, that sometimes you can turn off your attention. That's why that people who are playing sports, they can have great sort of broken bones or big bruises, but they keep carrying on because there's something else who's taken their interest. And this is actually the way of the body. If you don't pay attention to the body or to those aches and the pains, very often they disappear. And I've known that, so much so that I doubt my body very often. And I remember once having a fever, in Wat Nanachat, a very heavy fever when I was shaking and sweating profusely, and the 3 o'clock bell came for the chores. We were sweeping that day, I think it was the day before Wampra. And I felt really terrible, but I thought, hang on, I'm just going to go and sweep and see what happens. It was the last thing I thought of doing, the last thing sorry, I wanted to do, because I felt really miserable and really no energy. But I got out and did that, and after a few minutes, I started getting some energy, and after half an hour, the fever and all the sickness was gone. It was like an amazing sort of change around. I also remember even earlier, when I was a student, I had a very terrible flu, staying in this house. You know, all the other people who shared the house were at the college. I'm just sitting, laying in my bed, feeling like death. And then there was a knock on the door, and I was the only one there, so I had to answer it. I dragged myself to the door, you know, feeling really awful. And when I opened the door, it was a parcel delivery service. They were delivering my hi-fi system, my stereo system. And so I was very happy to take delivery of that, and even though I felt quite weak, I was excited enough to, you know, have some music I could play and get out my records and actually play them for the first time in a few weeks. And by the time I'd set up that sort of stereo system and played the first record, my cold had disappeared. It had actually completely gone. And I was actually, you know, in bed, bedridden before. And examples like that started to get me to doubt this body of mine. And I started to say, well, my mind is obviously, you know, my mind like Jimi Hendrix, much so much. I completely forgot about sort of the aches and pains in the body. And actually seeing that, seeing just the power of the mind and just how it's more important than the body, again, gave me much more confidence about doing a body contemplation which would untie this knot between mind and body. And so that you know that you've done that body contemplation and it's done its work if you can let that body go. And the way you let that body go is whether it's doing the body contemplation, or it's doing loving kindness, or it's doing breath meditation, or doing kasinas, or whatever, that you can focus on your object, and you can allow all of the body to disappear from your consciousness. And sometimes that you think, why is it that sometimes it's hard to do? The reason it's hard to do is because there's an attachment to your body. You're afraid to let it go. You're afraid to let it go because there's still some feeling that this body is you and yours. All fear comes, all fear in this sense comes from when you're letting go of something which you cherish, which you're attached to. It's like taking the toy away from a child, taking away your ice cream. It's my ice cream, it's my toy, you can't take it away from me. If it's not yours, there will be no fear. You know, what's not yours, you don't really worry about so much. So, if you can't let go of this body, it is because you still think very deep inside that it is my body. In particular, that you think that these senses have got to look after this body. That's why it's just so difficult to let go of the sense of sound. Why, even in the suttas, it says that the sound is like a thorn to first jhana. It can actually prick the attainment and take you out, you know, back into the five sensory world. And the reason is that because, again, the sound, or rather the hearing, is one of the main defenses of the body. You know, if you hear something walking towards you, it may be sort of an animal who's come to eat you. If it's a big bang close by, it may be an explosion or some enemy trying to creep up on you. And so often the sound is like our security system. And it's such an old security system for our body that we just don't want to turn it off. Because if we turn off our security system, we think that someone's going to come in and do us harm. And it's again just attachment to our body. Just say, okay, no, do us harm. No, tiger, come and eat me. No, mosquitoes, come and give me malaria. No, sickness, come and kill me. So you have to be willing to sort of die to the body, give up the body. if one wants to liberate the mind from the body and find out what lies underneath this body. So a lot of times when one is meditating and going deep into one's meditation, when a good lot of piti sukha comes up or a nimitta comes up, that's a sign that the mind is beginning to manifest, beginning to let go of the body. That's why this piti sukha arises. And it shows the mind, like the mind is radiant, it's powerful, it's beautiful. And the reason why that it's not seen is because it's covered up by the body, just like the moon is covered up by the clouds. It's covered up by the senses, the five senses of sight, sound, smell, taste and touch. And if we can somehow let these things go, we're actually releasing the moon from the clouds, as it were. We're releasing the mind. And of course, when it is released, it appears as something very brilliant, very beautiful, lots of piti sukha, very often like a wonderful light in the mind. When that light comes up in the mind, or the really powerful piti sukhas associated with that light, then the body is completely gone, it's disappeared. You don't have a nimitta and a sense of the body at the same time, it's one or the other. And if the nimitta can't last, it's because again you're attached to your body, or you're attached to the five senses. Said also, the five senses is very close to the body. So when you do body contemplation, another way of doing body contemplation is doing five sense contemplation. Because obviously the sense of touch is inherent to our body, and so is taste and smell, and sight and sound. This is all body senses. Yes, that's why it's called Karmaloka, karma, the world of the five senses, the world of the body, this gross, coarse physical body. You go into the Deva realms, you go into Manomayakaya, mind-made bodies. Or even in the Arupa realm, just no bodies at all, no Rupa, no body at all. So this whole five-sense world is all concerned with this physical body. Whenever I've contemplated that I was told years ago, I think by Western philosophy, that these senses are here to protect the body. But the more I've contemplated it, this is not so. This body is as a vehicle so the five senses can go and play in the world. We have a body so that sight can go and see this and see that and find pleasure in the realm of sight. We have a body so we can hear beautiful sounds, music, praise, the sound of the birds or whatever. That's what a body is there for. We have a body so we can taste beautiful foods and smell delicious fragrances. And so we can feel physical pleasure. This body is a vehicle for the five senses to play in the world. It's the playground of the five senses. And when one realizes that, you see that these five senses, they play around with the body, using the body. And they always sort of tend to fall over and hurt themselves. They're seeking for pleasure, but too often just getting into misery and disappointment and frustration. And you understand that to cut away the body, you cut away the five senses. To cut away the five senses, you cut away the body. These two are just two sides of the same coin, either body or five senses or body. And again, it makes the point why to actually attain to the deep meditations, you have to abandon the five senses or abandon the body. It's doing exactly the same thing. So when you're contemplating the body and doing body contemplation, I say it's just as valid to do five sense contemplation. That you just see, especially with sickness, just how the sights, or an old age, to see sights failing. You have to start wearing glasses, you don't see things as clear anymore. To hear your hearing fading when the body ages, so you can't really hear so clearly. That's why Tara has to sit so close to me, behind me. And even your feelings in the body, just the happy feelings tend to fade away, and there's more sense of heaviness in this body. And even the tastes tend to disappear, and the smells, the nose disappears, or the sense of smell gets worse and worse. You don't smell as sharply as you did when you were young. As the body fades, so do these five senses, but the mind is something completely different. So by focusing on, say, the corpse meditations, those of you who have had the privilege to see an autopsy or to see a dead body and see it again and again and again, to touch it, to see it cut up, to see as them, so me, as me, so them. Especially if you manage to see a person, in the in the coffin who's exactly the same age as you, you know, the same gender as you, the same race as you. Sometimes that makes an impression on you. You realize that you don't have to be old to die, or different race, it's you in that coffin. And understanding that, it gives a sense of letting go of this body. So by bringing up those visions in the mind, those memories in the mind, again and again and again and again, what you're doing is you're loosening the tie by focusing on the contemplation of this body, just all its different parts, the taking it apart, just imagining just what it's like inside of you. Just, you know, the bones and the guts inside of you. Just, you know, visualizing them. You don't have to be accurate in the way you visualize them, as long as you get sort of a rough idea of what this is and just realize it's just this factory, you know, which is, you know, puts food in one end and gets shit and urine out the other end, you know, and sort of out the other orifices as well. You get all this stuff coming out. And keep focusing on this and realize there's nothing really, you know, to delight in there. There's nothing to be averse into there. It's just a body. And just let it go and realize you can never really get any fulfillment or real lasting pleasure there. It's just a burden. And in fact, it's how often you have to look after this body. Now, even now, just, are you really comfortable sitting here? There's always an ache or a pain, or you have to go to the toilet, or there's something which you have to do with this body. It's just a pain. The only time that my body is comfortable, it's not even when I go to sleep at night. It's not comfortable when I go to sleep at night, especially if you've got a cold. You're always waking up all the time because, you know, you're sneezing, or all the saliva is dripping onto your pillow or whatever. The only time when my body is comfortable is when I let it go in samadhi. And it's just such a difference there when you're sitting there paying no attention to the body, it's disappeared. That's the only time when the body is comfortable. That's a powerful source of insight. The highest pleasure of the body is not in sex. The highest pleasure of the body is when the body disappears. When it ceases, the cessation of the body is the highest bodily pleasure. It might sound strange to you, well, there's no body there, you don't feel it, how can you call it pleasure? But you do that, and you understand why they say that. And it's quite obvious that when the body is just sitting there and you're not feeling it at all, and you, that's when the body is not irritating you anymore, when the five senses aren't irritating you. So the body contemplation actually shows you the body is an irritation. And when that irritation disappears, then is freedom. Freedom from the problem of the body. And the more times you can do that and reflect upon that and understand that and allow that to become your wisdom, to keep on soaking your mind with the wisdom of the irritation of the body and the beauty of liberation from the body, the easier it is to get into deep samadhi. Again, the reason why we can't get into deep samadhi is because of attachment to the body. That's one of the great causes for not being able to get into samadhi. And I think that that's the main reason why the Kubo Ajahns in Thailand always started their monks on doing lots of body contemplation, so they can get rid of their attachment to the body and have freedom to get into the deep meditations and go further into insight and liberation. So if you can't get into jhanas yet, it means you do well to do more contemplation of the body. Now reflect upon your death, reflect upon sickness and just how burdensome this body is. And to the point where you can get so, as it were, fed up with this body in a wise sense that you can just leave it alone. When you realize it's just a process, it's nothing to do with you, just like the old simile of the sticks and the grass and the twigs in the jeta grove, you don't care about it anymore. What you don't care about, you don't think about. What you don't think about, you don't worry about. What you don't worry about doesn't disturb you. So if the body is disturbing you, it's because you're worrying, because you're thinking, because you think it's important to you. And so having that ability just to let go of the body by reflecting on the body contemplations, it means that you can test yourself by, even when you're healthy, see if you can get into jhanas or not, see if you can let go of this body. And then when you are sick, it's not a big problem anymore. It's just the body doing its thing. I just like that sometimes, you know, as an abbot, you get sort of young monks misbehaving, or middle monks misbehaving, or anagarikas misbehaving. I've been abbot long enough. I've seen and done that before. It's just the same old thing again. Everyone has to go through this. So it's just, you know, anagarikas being anagarikas, that's all. It's young monks being young monks, boys being boys, girls being girls. So after a while, you just, you know, you smile inside. You do your job as an abbot and tell them off. But, you know, you realize it's just not them, you're not being personal. It's just the way of a monastery, it's par for the course, and it's the same with the body. You get sick, it's just par for the course, it's just a body being the body. So you don't get upset about it. You don't make a big problem out of it, it's not a big deal anymore. You can just let it go. You don't worry about it. And that ability to let go of this body means that when it is sick, you can have freedom in the mind. Even though the body is sick, the mind doesn't need to be sick. It means that even when you're sick, you can get into deep meditations. You can just let go of this body, even though it aches and it's got no energy. When you say I've got no energy, that's body energy. Mind energy is something completely different than body energy. That's what I found. Even the body might be just so tired, and you've done so many things, that the mind has got another source of energy altogether. It doesn't depend upon your food or your health in the body. The mind energy is completely different. So you can turn on to that mind energy. You can turn it on by reflection on things like the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. Reflection on the places where the Buddha lived, if you've been over to the holy places in India. And reflecting on the great Kubo Ajahn, the teachers you've lived with. Reflecting on sort of something which is inspiring, on the Buddha, the Dhamma, you know, the meaning of all of this, where it's coming from. No matter how sick you are, or just how close to death you are, you know, when the body is almost completely sort of shut down, you can inspire yourself because you can tap into mind energy. When you know how to do that, to tap into mind energy, even though the body is sick, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be a wonderful freedom from this body? Some of you are sick now. Some of you are healthy now. Those who are sick will later be healthy. Those who are healthy will later be sick. We all take our turns from time to time. Some people have more of a bad deal than others, but we all have our share sooner or later. So don't wait for yourself to be sick. See if you can let go of this body right now. So don't forget the body contemplations, which we are traditional. To do them, you just know from time to time. You know, when you're sitting in your hut, if you're not doing breath meditation or loving kindness meditation, just go through the 31 parts of the body. You know, get some of the books which we have, which have pictures of those parts. Now look at them, get to know them, and just always remember that, you know, when you're taking your body to the hall, you're just taking 31 parts to the hall. You know, when you're sort of taking them away, you're just laying your 31 parts down. So, you know, that's all you're doing. Just, you know, you're carrying 31 parts and moving together, or the skeleton and the flesh, or however you look upon it. Just like this skin, just like a big bag holding all these things in. Keep reflecting on that way, that again and again and again. If you had the fortune to see somebody die, or like some of you saw that old man today who'd fallen over with all the blood on his face. So, you know, just see the way of this body, that's all it is. It's got all this liquid inside, all this red liquid, which when it starts pouring out is a danger to the health. That's why I have to go and sort of try and take them to the hospital and try and make them well again. But just to keep reflecting, that blood is inside you as well. And the more, if you have had opportunities to see accidents or road accidents or carnage or whatever, or autopsies, it'd be a marvelous opportunity to keep those images in your mind. And as that person, so me. And after a while, you just get completely dispassionate towards a body. And just keep taking it apart again and again and again. As one of the monks said, that after a while it becomes good fun to keep taking this body apart. And the reason it's becoming fun is because you're lessening the attachment to the body. And it's a sign that you're doing it properly. The more you are detaching from a source of suffering, the more you're putting away suffering, the more happiness comes. So that you don't have to get rid of the body completely to get the first paycheck, the first payoff of just having lots of happiness and joy in your life. That means you're not really worried about sort of the opposite sex, you're not really worried too much about the fact you're going to die, or you get a little bit of sickness, you're not really worried about it, you can just, okay, I might go to the doctor, see what happens, if it's something serious, well, I'm going to die anyway, what's the big deal? You don't really sort of worry too much about this body, or care too much about it. And, you know, that lack of a burden, it's just like throwing away this huge thing which we're conditioned to carry around with us when we're very young. The more we throw away that burden, just the more free we are. And that freedom is always measured by happiness, by joy, by contentment. It's being able to be content even though you're sick. Being content even though that, you know, you've got no energy. In this monastery, you're allowed not to have energy. You just go and just go back to your hut and lie down and just watch your breath. You can have just this bright mind, even though you can't do anything. You're just in your bed all the day. But keep your mind bright and happy. And this is actually the way you can separate the body from the mind. When I'm saying separating the body from the mind, I'm not saying the mind is going to control the body. So when you're really sick, you know, the mind just makes you walk and makes you do all the other things. And even though you're just about to die, you can go and help Ajahn Chattamala lift all these stones to make my cave. That's not what I mean. It's not sort of doing willpower. It's not having this mind which is like a super person which controls a dying body. I'm saying it's just when the body is sick, you lie it down, but your mind is happy. Your mind is free. The mind is just realizes that this body is just something which it's living in for the time being. But it can detach. It can untie itself. Just like the sticks, grass and twigs of the Jeta Grove. And that's the result of doing the body contemplation. And not only do you realize it's not me, not mine, not a self, so you're not afraid of death, you don't sort of have any lust. All that lust which comes up in the mind, it's all to do with the bodies, your beautiful bodies. No one gets lust to these old ladies who, like Sifa, who came today, you know, she's in her 80s and has a walking stick, or to Bruce, the old Kiwi who came today. No one gets lust to old people, do they? It's always like to young, pretty things, or fit, healthy young monks. So just realize just all these things which burden us, which can stop us enjoying the beauty of monastic life and all the wonderful freedoms of monastic life. As we keep on contemplating these things and contemplating until we get freedom. And again, freedom is a gradual. It grows and grows and grows. One feels more and more free. As one feels more and more free, one feels more and more happiness. And it's great being free of lust and free of concern. So you know you're never going to disrobe as a monk. You know you're always going to stay as celibate. And it's marvelous having that freedom. You don't have to concern yourself about those things anymore. You know, you don't have to fantasize or dream or plan anymore. You're free of those things. Wouldn't that be wonderful to have all that gone? And so you can look at a lady or look at a man, you're looking upon them as a person, not sort of a sexual object. You're not looking at their body, you're just looking upon, you know, their character and how you can serve and help them in the Dhamma. It's marvelous when that can happen. Then you can really be a teacher. You can really be a friend. It doesn't get complicated with all these other things. So doing the contemplation of the body again and again and again, this is the fruits of it. So don't neglect the contemplation of the bodies. And again, if you can get into jhanas, then fair enough, you don't need to do too much contemplation of the body anymore. Because, you know, you've broken one of the ties. If you're an anagami, absolutely you don't need to do it at all. But please, if you haven't got to that sense of freedom with the mind separating from the body, please keep on doing a lot of body contemplation from time to time. There's so many things you can do during the day. There's so much time which you have available to you. You know, if you get bored, and one of the signs of boredom is like sloth and torpor, just change the meditation around. Do some loving kindness meditation, some body contemplation, some breath contemplation. Keep it interested. And little by little, it's not doing things differently. It's not sort of scattering the mind. Because all these things are just supporting just the same thing. It's all just things which work together, support one another, and will lead into liberation. And the only reason which I keep on stressing jhanas is because it's such an important part for liberation, it's an important step, but it's also an important sign. You know, if you can get into samadhi, it means that you've detached from things. You're doing the job. It's one of the payoffs, one of the signposts on the Eightfold Path to show you that, yeah, you know, you're getting somewhere at last. Even not jhanas, even just piti sukha coming up in the meditation, contentment. It shows you're actually getting somewhere. You're letting go of the body. You're becoming free. So when you're sick, you can still smile. You can still do your meditation in your room. Even though you feel terrible and you feel like death. It's only the body feels like death. And the mind can still fly free from this body. So this is what the meditation on the body should be leading you towards. So there's many, many techniques. And one of the reasons I perhaps don't go into the techniques of body contemplation so much is, again, because I can liberate my mind from the body pretty easily. So that... perhaps there's many other books which we have in the library, tapes about different types of body contemplations, but even though I don't talk about it all that much, it doesn't mean I don't respect it and I don't really encourage it. Please do a lot of body contemplation until it comes to the point that you can really let go of this body and be free from it, because it's such a pain and it's such a burden, and you know, you've got a chance now. Don't think because you're sick you can't practice in this monastery. Sometimes being sick means that you have even more incentive to do body contemplation and to find this way of just, you know, untying the knot between the body and the mind. So even though the body is sick, the mind doesn't need to be sick at all. A1.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.